Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. How much does the government know about you? How much does Target, AT&T, and GM know about you? Well, how about they know everything that they want to know about you because you told them. You know that little question that pops up on your smartphone every now and then, can we use your location? Yeah, well, that's just tip of the digital information iceberg. So how should we all feel about this? Could we actually jump off the grid and get rid of this? Or, you know, do we just accept it? How data collecting corporations and snooping government agencies are destroying democracy. That's the question right now. And we invite you into our conversation. Call in at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Robert Scheer is the author of the book, They Know Everything About You. He is the editor-in-chief of the Webby Award-winning online magazine Truth Dig, a professor at the University of Southern California, Attenberg School of Communications and Journalism. He's also the co-host of Left, Right, and Center, a weekly syndicated radio show broadcast on NPR and many stations. Robert, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So, how much do they know about me?
Well, let me put it a different way. First, they know everything about you. The title is absolutely correct. And the information that we have voluntarily given over to the Internet to ease shopping is what any dictator would have thought unimaginable. They can know how far we've read in a book or what movie we watched, how long we watched it, what our response was to our friends, who our friends are, what we said in our chats, and so forth. So the information that we have voluntarily surrendered without reading terms of agreement and without having, you know, been asked, do we want to opt in? The only thing we can do is if we discover it's going to third parties and others that we didn't intend, we could try to opt out, but we have no consumer protection where they have to give, you know, get explicit permission when that is marketed, it's awesome. And it's the reason, the reason it's not going to stop as a commercial activity. It's the basis of Internet profit. The reason we've had this massive growth of the Internet is because it's been highly profitable for those companies building out. And what makes it profitable is the ability to do targeted advertising. And that's what's wiped out print publications. It's wiped out, I'm going to wipe out broadcast, because the ads that were sold that underwrote newspapers and broadcast television basically, you know, was a expectation of what people were watching and how they responded. Now we know with the Internet, and the reason all those ads pop up near what you're reading is if you looked for a car and, you know, people want to sell you a car, will know exactly what car you've been looking for, and they can target their ads and to your taste, your desire, your age, your sex, your affinities, your religion, everything else. Now, if that remains an informed consumer transaction, that is to say, it's in the truly in the free market, it's between you and a private company, there are terms of agreement that you understand, that it's a transparent activity, then I guess it's your right if you want to sacrifice your privacy to become a super shopper. And if consumer sovereignty is all you're interested in and having the power of the shopper and you're willing to share that data, I guess that can be said to be an individual choice. Where it becomes problematic, and the subject of my book is, as we know from the Snowden revelations, when governments, and not only our own government, governments throughout the world, can grab that data. And suddenly, you know, nothing is private. And what I argue in the book is that the great contribution of American governance to the world was the notion of individual sovereignty, wrapped up not only in the First Amendment that we're more familiar with, but the Fourth Amendment, the whole notion that you are allowed, not only allowed, you are guaranteed a zone of privacy, of individual sovereignty. And most recently, the Roberts Court surprised me and some others, despite being a conservative court, or maybe because it is a conservative court, but the liberals joined in on a unanimous decision on cell phones, saying that, no, we have a living constitution. That zone of individual privacy goes beyond your house. and you cannot make a warrantless search, a general search prohibited by the Fourth Amendment, into a cell phone, even if you are arrested and this smartphone is in your on your presence. The police cannot just crack your code, your password, and get all that data. They have to observe the Fourth Amendment, have a specific warrant, due process, court order. And indeed, Justice Roberts argued persuasively that this was the right, the basic freedom, that kicked off the American War for Independence against the Crown. This was a right of the poorest peasants in England under common law for hundreds of years, that even an agent of the king could not invade your domicile, and that that was carried over to in the colonies. It was guaranteed in the Fourth Amendment. It was what the Sons of Liberty were upset about when they kicked off the first struggle, and that in the name of national security after 9/11, we have shredded that principle.
Okay, now, so let me ask, let me jump in here a little bit. And so how does it matter that, I mean, if the government knows I have a kitty cat because I put up kitty cat videos on YouTube, how is that going to endanger democracy?
Well, let me use the example I use with the conservative commentator on the Left, Right, and Center show I do on NPR, Rich Lowry, who's the editor of the National Review. He happened to casually mention he saw 50 Shades of Grey and he didn't like it. And I said, that's fine, but what if you saw 50 Shades of Grey and then you went out and bought Lady Chatterley's Lover and then you wrote an email to a friend discussing your view on these things, and then you went and had dinner with some people, and then they sent emails commenting on your comments and so forth, and 20 years from now, you're running for the Senate, or you're applying for a certain job or something, and this whole profile that has been mined and collated and so forth by third-party people has resulted in a profile of you, some of it which may be accurate, some may be fragmented, some may be phony. And it's just out there as the definition of who you are, and it becomes this essential document that's made public. And so that sort of gives conveys the degree of intimacy. Let me offer a past example. We saw the movie Selma, and you know, and there the recognition that the head of our intelligence agency, FBI, at that time, J. Edgar Hoover, was determined to destroy Martin Luther King. He didn't like him, and he didn't like the role he was playing. He was reduced, though, to finding out things about King that you would find out by tapping his phone, by following him, very primitive means of surveillance. If the head of the FBI now wanted to destroy some person who's politically active in the society, like Martin Luther King, they would know everything about him, as the title of my book suggests, and it would be very easy to smear them, to drive them to suicide, as Hoover tried to do with King. And but in more important, and some point I argue with my students, who are not as concerned about this as this, because they said they're not going to do anything wrong. Question is, what is wrong? And the whole point of books like 1984 and Brave New World is that if you create an atmosphere in which people think they have no private lives, everything is observed by the authorities, you develop a system of self-censorship.
All right.
People act politically in a much more cautious way, and they modify their behavior.
Okay.
And the assumption of our system of...
Bob, we're going to take a break.
So we'll
pick it right back up. Bob Scheer, he's the author of They Know Everything About You. He's the editor-in-chief of Online Truth Dig. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Bob Scheer. He's the author of the book, They Know Everything About You. He's also written 9 other books, including The Great American Stick-Up, which is how Reagan, Republicans, and Clinton Democrats enriched Wall Street while mugging Main Street. Other books just as electrifying as that, Bob. So when we talk about all this privacy invasion, and they know everything about you, and in your subtitle is how data collecting corporations and snooping government agencies are destroying democracy. I mean, are they destroying democracy because they have all this information? It allows them to be better at manufacturing consent?
Yes, but I think there's also, they're also destroying the multinational corporations' effectiveness. I think the positive story in my book is the pushback from Google and Facebook and Apple and these companies who recognize that for a multinational corporation to thrive in the modern world economy, they have to have the trust of customers or consumers of their product throughout the world. They can't be subject to one national security organization in one state. And so the pushback after the Snowden leaks, before the Snowden leaks, we didn't get much pushback, but after the Snowden leaks, the main proponents for preventing NSA surveillance and the development of the haystack and grabbing all our data has actually come from companies like Facebook and Google and Apple. And when you read an excerpt of my book on my own site, there's a Google ad on the bottom based on their algorithms saying push back against the NSA. And that's coming from Google. Because the fact is, the great vitality of the Internet, which is fabulous, that's why I have an Internet publication. It's a great educational tool. It's a great way of reaching people all over the world. But the fact is, it will be destroyed if people don't have the confidence that their surfing on the Internet is a basically private activity, and their correspondence, their email, and everything else. And I think these companies have come to recognize that, and I do credit Snowden and other whistleblowers with forcing that development, but I think the companies are acting accordingly. Now you have the situation where they're trying to offer encryption, Google and Apple and others, to the people using their services, and the FBI is denouncing them. The head of the FBI, and that is CIA. So that's a real issue. Another one that my book raises is the role of the CIA through a company called InQtel in creating and providing seed money for Silicon Valley companies, several hundred of them, and one of the major ones, Palantir, is the company that mines this data for all of our intelligence agencies and many police departments. We know New Orleans Police Department, the Los Angeles Police Department. So you have government intrusion. The CIA is not supposed to be involved in our domestic life, and yet you have the intrusion of these companies into our domestic life through what are basically dummy corporations.
Sure. Yeah, but aren't they protecting us from ISIS when they do this type of stuff?
What happens with ISIS?
Aren't they protecting us? Isn't the CIA or the NSA, aren't they all protecting us when they, as they mine our information? Isn't that how they justify it? National defense?
Let me say, first of all, even if that were, you could make that argument. The founders of our country said that if you want to have a representative government, you have to figure out how to protect the people without violating their basic rights. Because they argued in our Constitution that freedom is not an indulgence in the safe and secure time. Freedom is a necessity to having good governance. So the people who gave us these protections faced a much riskier situation than we did after 9/11. You know, if the English returned as they did in 1812, they burned the Capitol down. There were enemies abroad, Spain, France, and so forth. They had the example of the Roman Empire. So the people who enshrined the notion of limited government and protection and the Bill of Rights in our Constitution were the people who were going to be the government. And they said, you have to observe us with suspicion. You have to keep us in line. Power corrupts. It will even corrupt us. So we've turned that upside down. Instead of it being the citizens that should be viewing their government with suspicion, it is the government that views every single citizen as a potential terrorist, and they gather this haystack of information. The record is very clear, however. The President Obama, who was supposed to know better as a constitutional law professor, in fact, could only come up in his speech with one example where he claimed this haystack to find these needles of bad actors worked, and that was the case of the San Diego hijacker, Mindar. And of course, as the record is quite clear, he was wrong. Mindar was living at the home of an FBI informant. His existence was well known to both the CIA and the FBI. The two agencies didn't combine their notes. But in fact, we didn't need this haystack surveillance. We didn't need it in Boston or the case of Charlie Hebdo in France, where the people who are accused of those actions were well known. The one in France, one of the two brothers, had already served.
Okay,
time.
So let's talk about what this
sweeping.
So the government is sucking up. They're vacuuming all of this information. They know everything about me, and they're going to use that to keep a democracy in check or not destroy democracy. What does this mean for everyday people? How do we figure out what this means to me? Do I go off the grid? Do I go live in the cabin on the woods, throw away my iPhone? What should I do?
Well, first of all, I want to say it's a bipartisan issue. We get pushback from people, Ron Paul and Rand Paul, and we get pushback from Ed Markey, who's a senator now from Massachusetts. And historically, privacy is a notion embraced by conservatives as well as liberals. We also get people who are more indifferent to this than they should be or on the wrong side. Hillary Clinton condemning Edward Snowden as a traitor before the person he's even had a trial, whereas, I think he did what any good citizen should do. So I think what we have to recognize is the need for a national debate about what makes you secure, what is the role of freedom, why did we as a nation believe in limited government, what are these restraints on power all about, and have a debate about it. And I think in terms of, meeting a threat like ISIS or something, it's very clear that we don't even have the basic information we need about where these movements come from, what they represent, what countries they're operating in, and classification of the kind we've been talking about hasn't helped. It's amazing that our government has not come up with a single strong example where gathering this haystack of information has made us more secure. I assumed there would be some examples. The president didn't offer any. And it seems to me that in every single instance, if they hadn't been asleep at the switch, if they'd done the old-fashioned police work, checked on someone who had already served time, what are they up to now, and done what you would do routinely, we would have been in a much safer situation.
Right, but you're saying that this is destroying democracy. It's on the cover of your book.
Well, destroying democracy is a very clear case that was outlined in Brave New World and 1984. We know that democracy is something you have to struggle for, and that the public, and this is, after all, again, the assumption of our Constitution, the people have to be made to feel secure in raising objection, in redressing grievances, and expressing themselves, that it doesn't come naturally. People can be intimidated. I've worked in totalitarian countries, intimidation becomes the norm. People don't even talk about it. They just know they're being observed. They know they'll get in trouble saying the wrong thing. They don't protest because they're afraid of the consequence. Self-censorship is the most effective means of controlling people. And when you can get people to buy into it, to define their freedom as we increasingly do as consumer sovereignty, shopping is our main act of freedom. I ask my students, their main thing is they can buy this gadget instead of that gadget. They can find that restaurant. I want to find a good restaurant. I'll tell you where I am at every moment. I'll give you my thumbprint. I'll give you my DNA. I'll give you all my information so I'll make a better choice about where to get pasta tonight. And then they've ruled out in their mind that they're ever going to do anything that's controversial, risk-taking, exceeds certain limits, incurs social disapproval, is unpopular, like joining Occupy or writing wrongs about racial prejudice or anything else, and they're not going to stick out. And if you define freedom as consumer sovereignty, you've given up the pursuit of real political democracy, which requires an independent population free to express itself, willing to make errors, willing to take unpopular positions, and you have a cowed population. And I'm afraid we're moving increasingly in that direction. The assumption that our government is always benign, we'll always do the right thing, and anyway, we're not going to do anything that's going to cause trouble.
So you say that Barack Obama is worse on privacy than any other president. He makes George W. Bush and Nixon look good.
Yes, I, and this is not because I voted for the man. I maxed out in political contributions. I had great hope for him. I think he's incredibly bright, and he's a particular disappointment because he probably understands this issue because he's a constitutional law professor better than any president we've had in memory. But the fact of the matter is he used the Espionage Act, which is a heinous weapon to use in controlling your population, to silence whistleblowers as much as all previous presidents combined. And he went after people who were really doing their duty, and in attacking Snowden, he distorted the law. He said we have whistleblower protection that Snowden could have used. He knows, should have known that as a private contractor, because a lot of this stuff has been contracted out to private companies, you don't have whistleblower protection.
Right. So, do you think that people should be? Do you think that people should be more alarmed, or they just people don't seem to be very alarmed?
I don't know if that's true, because I've just done a program this morning with someone from the Pew Research Institute, and they pointed out a study that I have looked at that somehow 90 or 92% of the people say they are concerned. It depends on what polling data you look at, but there is certainly among younger people a pervasive argument that suggests that the government is going to be generally benign, that anyway you are not going to do anything that's going to disturb the status quo, and we have lost the idea that the exercise of citizenship in a democracy involves some risk-taking, being willing to be unpopular from time, think the unpopular thought, and we've lost the whole notion of why we have a division of powers, why we have checks and balances, why we have a Bill of Rights. We've lost the thrill of those ideas, actually.
Okay, Robert Scheer, you're here to remind us about all those things. His book is They Know Everything About You, How Data Collecting Corporations and Snooping Government Agencies Are Destroying Democracy, and other very exciting books he's written. Thank you so much. Also with his website. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flab and David Martin Davies. Elena Soros is our intern. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.